Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is for March 21st, 2019. And yes, this would be the first day of spring. So enjoy it while you can, although I think there's some people still buried under snow who aren't really thinking spring. They might be thinking spring, but the weather isn't. So happy spring 2019. Every day that we live on this planet is a gift, and I believe you should actually look at it that way. Because, let me explain something. Let's just look in our own solar system here. There's very little terrain that is livable for the human species. So, I would say do what you can do to enjoy your time here. Don't get all caught up in the money deal. Money is something that is handy to have, and it's good to have. If you have more, it makes things easier. But don't make it the end of the world. If you're running around and you're burning yourself up for that dollar bill, then you have to ask, is it worth it? So anyway, and a lot of people get caught up because, television advertising, they got to have a better car, bigger house, and there's just no end to it. So anyway, if that's the situation, then, and a lot of times people do that because somebody else is putting the kind of peer pressure on them to do more. So anyway, just my advice. Simplify your life, and the best lifestyle that I can see as far as healthiness, and this is something that I think is important, to live a long and fruitful life and enjoy it. And if you're not doing that, if you're burning yourself up chasing dollars and you're going to die young doing it, what have you gained? So anyway, that's my two cents worth. Here's an interesting article. Here's some science to it and some, it comes back to this place in science in Russia called Tunguska. Now, when I was working with these Russian scientists in the mid-1990s, we talked about Tunguska, which these scientists had actually been there and they'd studied it at ground zero. Tunguska, if you go on the, just like it sounds, T-U-N-G-U-S-K-A, and if you go online, you can see the pictures that in, was the early 1900s, I don't remember the exact year, 1905 or something, there was a tremendous explosion in Russia. And the belief was that there was a meteor that came into Earth's atmosphere and crashed into the ground. The only trouble is, there isn't anything there. There's nothing there. There's no fragments of meteor. There's nothing. And so what they're seeing, first of all, is that sometimes these bolides that come in to the atmosphere break up, but still there's shrapnel, there's stuff left over that comes down and does hit the ground. So you can identify an object exploding in the atmosphere, or some of them have already all made it all the way down to the Earth, like out at Winslow, Arizona. And I have some funny stories about going and visiting that site. But at any rate, this past December, there was a bolide. This is something that they estimate that this was about 14 feet in diameter. So that's pretty big. Those little, when you see a shooting stars at night and they go zipping across, and it looks like this bright light up in the atmosphere, typically those things are about the size of a pea or smaller even. And they're just a flash in the pan. They light up and they make a nice tracer. A lot of them don't hit the ground. They burn up before they hit the ground. But anyway, this past December, there was a pretty good size one in the region around Kamchatka, Kamchatka, I always say that wrong, Kamchatka Peninsula is the correct pronunciation, in northeastern Russia. That's where there's a lot of volcanic activity, etc. But anyway, this bolide comes into the atmosphere and explodes with an estimated 173 kilotons of TNT. Now, that's a measurement, that's an energy measurement they typically use, like, for nuclear bombs. And just to give you a feeling for this, 15 kilotons is the size of the Hiroshima bomb of World War II. And so this would be about 10 times that size. Okay. And so anyway, but it does not hit the ground, or if it does, nobody knows where it hit. And by the way, I have a new expression. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the air before. It's that if a tree fell in the forest and NASA scientists were there and pretended they didn't hear it, would it still make a noise? So anyway, think about that. So anyway, we don't really know if this thing hit the ground or not, because that's a vast area up there. It's just unpopulated. But here's the point. As they're discussing this, they're talking about the Tunguska meteorite impact, and they said this was a 3 megatons, which would be 3,000 kilotons. So this would be 3,000 divided by 15. Let me quick do that in my head. 200. So the Tunguska meteorite explosion, and they're saying it was a meteorite, I'm about to get to the point here, would have been about 200 times the Hiroshima bomb, which was 15 kilotons of TNT. Okay, so give you a feeling. So by far and away, the Tunguska event had more energy than probably all of these other bolides combined. But the only problem is there's not a trace of a physical object at Tunguska. And so what they found, according to the scientists I talked to from Russia, these were atmospheric scientists from the University of Novosibirsk in central Russia, and they were on site, and they said it had all of the earmarks of an electrical discharge. And so when the trees were blown out in a pattern, in a circular pattern, they were all completely scorched in what appeared to be an explosion that was very quick. In other words, it blew all the leaves off, blew all the bark off, scorched the trunks of the trees, but they didn't burn. They didn't burn in the sense that all the trees would be burning. It happened like a flash. So anyway, then there's other earmarks such as iron magnetite, which is basically an iron oxide that is magnetic. It's a stone. And when you get these, like if you go to rock shops, if you go out west to the Dakotas, or you go out to Kansas or Montana, there's all these rock shops all the way along, and you can, and you know, other shops for tourist items. They always have a bin of magnetite, and they're little polished stones, and they're highly magnetic. But anyway, that happens very quickly in a magnetic field, and so typically these are a result of a very strong magnetic field that occurred for a short period of time. And a lot of times it's in rings around the location where the electrical discharge hit. Okay, so anyway, and this is another issue, that when the big electrical discharge was occurring, remember the Moses event? Moses talks about the pillar of fire that reaches into the heavens, and it was in the form of a giant fiery tornado. Well, that's the electrical discharge. That's exactly what it looks like. And so this is the other thing about looking at something I do. I look at ancient data and interpret it in terms of the plasma discharge comet model. Because if you look at what the ancients were talking about, they couldn't possibly make this up. I mean, these are people walking around in sandals and, you know, they have spears and swords that they're fighting with. I mean, these are not advanced people. So when they tell you that they saw this pillar of fire stretching up into the heavens while there were earthquakes and tsunamis going on and entire big bodies of water moving around like the Red Sea, then you really have to believe them, because they can't just make this stuff up, because they don't they don't have any reference frame to make this up. But anyway, getting back to the Tunguska event, so it turns out that the Tunguska event was an electrical discharge. And nights before the actual event, there was a brightening of the night sky, a general brightening. And of course, that would have been the result of Earth being in a comet tail, or very close to a comet tail. And so a lot of times you don't see the comet because it's coming from the sunward side, and you just don't see it. I mean, especially the ancients, there's no way for them to really see this because the bright light of the sun is blocking it out. And, the blue nitrogen, the blue of the atmosphere is very bright during the day, the blue sky, or et cetera, or if it's cloudy. And so they really didn't see this thing coming, but all of a sudden it comes by and lets go a discharge, an electrical discharge. Bam! It discharges to Earth with 3,000 kiloton energy, and this is at least 50 times bigger than any of the other bolides that have been recorded in history. Anyway, I think this is very interesting, and this news is just coming out now. This actually occurred on the 18th of December, this past December. Okay, next topic. FAA is now being investigated for not grounding the Boeing 737 MAX 8 airplanes. And more, as I was on John Moore's show yesterday, and he started out by talking about this, that a pilot that had the very same plane that crashed in, was it Nairobi, in Africa, the day before, the previous pilot had the same problem, but knew how to switch off the automatic pilot and was able to recover the plane without it crashing. So there's a serious problem here, boys and girls. And the FAA not grounding this, my comment is that there are probably some high-ranking Boeing executives, it's probably still on the payroll at Boeing, sitting on the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. So anyway, that's I just can't believe that Boeing would do this and risk people's lives to try and somehow save face. So Trump did the right thing. He grounded those airplanes. And as I was going on the Power Hour last week, last Wednesday, before I was the guest on the Power Hour, the news flash came out that Trump had grounded those planes. And he didn't just say, okay, well, continue your flight, go to your end destination. He said, you get your butt to the nearest airport that's available and you land. You land all those planes, and he grounded them all. So hurrah for having a president with kahunas enough to take on the big industries. And also right now, as I say, the FAA is under investigation for allowing those airplanes to continue flying. Oh, anyway, speaking also of Boeing, they just announced their new 777X. Now, I've been on the 777s, and they're an amazing airplane. I'll tell you a little story. They're bigger than the 747s, which are still kind of the queen of big airplanes, but the 777X is going to be bigger. It's the longest airplane in the world, and the same design. It's the big Rolls-Royce engines under the wings, and pretty stout aircraft. But when I was teaching astronomy at the university level, my students had to do a project, some kind of astronomy project or something. And I really gave them free rein to do something that interested them. So we'd get some, not just, okay, you got to study Venus or go read a book about Venus. No, I let them have very wide range on their projects that they did. And so anyway, one of the students in my class, I had about 100 students in my class, astronomy, like college astronomy, one of the students was a mechanic out at the airport, at the international airport, and he worked on 747s. So anyway, his project was to take the whole class out to the airport, to the hangar, where they had a 747 completely, it had its, like, you know, 10 million mile servicing or whatever. So it had all of the skin off the body of the plane, all the engines were down, all of the wing, I mean, this thing was like taken apart. And so we went up inside of this thing, and they had taken out all the insides of the plane. The seats, there was nothing in there at all. It was just open. And so I'm a little squeamish on heights, especially when there's like gridwork. These steps were just gridwork. So we go up on the scaffolding, walk into the Boeing 747 with nothing inside, and it looked like a football field in that, inside of that airplane. And the outside of the airplane had all the skin off, the outer skin, so you could see all the framing, and you could see the inside wall of the airplane from the outside. But what was amazing is this entire airplane excuse me, was covered with hydraulic tubes and electronic conduit. Oh my, it was just unbelievable. But anyway, that's very interesting that Boeing now has a new 777 extended. It's like an extended cab of the other one. I've been on 777s. I've been at airports where I had to walk out on the tarmac. So instead of coming down a tube, you know, like at most of the major airports, you come down out of the terminal, down a walkway enclosed, and then you step into the airplane. You really don't get a good view of the airplane, but I've been on at airports where you literally walk down the steps from the airplane and you walk across the tarmac and into the terminal. But anyway, the 777s are interesting because they're just so big when you look at them compared to the other planes. But they look a little funny because their wings are short. Anyway, that brought up this past week I was interested in looking at some early 1900s aircraft. And I started looking at the videos of flying boats. Now, these were popular in the 1930s and 40s, etc., because one of the big problems with aircraft as they started getting bigger and more capable of longer distances is that they didn't have any place to take off or land. And so anyway, to cure this, the designers, the airplane companies, that were big, and these companies were competing on world markets already, especially for mail delivery. Mail, airmail became a popular issue and a very good business for these airplanes because it gave them steady, basically steady income. It gave them a job, whereas passengers, people were still not flying in mass like they are today. So anyway, they came up with the idea of the flying boat. And of course, they made these bigger and bigger and bigger. What's interesting is for their size, they really did not have that much carrying capacity. But they were big, and they did have a range where they could fly for a long ways. They could go from, for example, San Francisco or Los Angeles to Hawaii. So Pan Am started these routes that are very long, you know, the like out into the middle of the Pacific. They had one called the China Clipper that could leave San Francisco and fly over to China nonstop. So that was quite an amazing thing to have, you know, and this bridged the world. This was something that brought the world together like never before, because previously everything depended on shipping, on boats. If you had to go a long ways, you had to go on a boat. So that opened up the routes, for example, to the Pacific, to the South Pacific, and you could land any place. As long as there was water, you had a runway. You could take off. So you did not need all of this extensive facilities. As long as you could, you know, if the city was by the water or whatever. So, and I remember seeing some of these posters, 1930s posters of the Pan Am flights going to Hawaii or Guam or South Pacific or to China or Japan, etc., on the Atlantic side, also flying to especially South America. It opened up South America, and especially the coastal cities of South America, where the now all of a sudden you could have air traffic. But anyway, just a piece of nostalgia there. If you get a chance and you take an interest in this, go back. There's a lot of, and like I say, I don't look for any science on YouTube, but YouTube does have a lot of interesting things, like with the old airplanes. They have a lot of good videos of these old airplanes. In fact, one I saw was very interesting. It was like in the 1930s, the China Clipper, the Pan American China Clipper, is flying over the partially completed Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. So very interesting. Just a quick note on Brexit. We're heading up to the last few days here. So we'll see what happens. The people in England are being encouraged to renew their passports. Now, I'm not sure what kind of catch that has, because if they leave the European Union, I could only think that their passports will somehow be linked to the European Union. So I would think they'd want to wait until after they split from the European Union before they renew their passports. But anyway, I don't know all of the details. I don't know if you're British. I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea. But all I can say is we should be very happy we split from them 300 years ago. CNN did a report this past week on the 100 most polluted cities in the world. And out of all of them, except for one or two, they are in China and India. So here's the point. And of course, there are thousands of polluted cities in all over the world. I mean, the United States, but Latin America has their share of extreme pollution, where they don't have any control over the exhaust from vehicles, and just horrific. You know, people are literally dying from pollution in the cities, getting extremely sick, etc. People breathing this in, and just all you can say is they're extremely unhealthy environment. But the 100 most polluted cities, all of them in India and China. And here's the point, that the Paris Climate Accord, which was everybody was raving about, oh, we need to sign this so we can save the world and greenhouse pollution, you know, etc. You know, the problem is right now, and the problem, which I will repeat with the, and I, you know, I'm kind of a tree hugger myself in a one sense, but regarding climate change, it like puts the target out there in 20 years. And the problem is you got to stop burning all this polluting hydrocarbon right now. And the Paris Climate Accord would allow China and India primarily to continue polluting at any level they wanted while taxing heavily the United States and moving that money to industrialize the countries of China and India. So it was just a big grab to take the wealth of the United States and move it over to China and India while allowing them to pollute like crazy. And if you've ever seen some pictures or videos of China and India, these cities are unbelievable. I mean, I can't believe people actually live in these places, but they do. And there again, I can't believe anybody lives in New York City, but they do, lots of them. And I guess they're happy there. It's not a place for me. But pollution, the amount of, here's the, one of the problems, and it leads into another topic, that we're just using far too much energy. We are addicted to energy. We think it's part of our lifestyle, and it's really not. I can guarantee you I've been to places where the people live really, really well. They have very pure water. They have very good food without chemicals, without Monsanto, without glyphosate, without Roundup, etc. So there are very good places to live, and it does not cost much money. I'm not going to tell you where these places are. If you want to go searching, you can find them. There are places where, you know, the crime rate is relatively low. You know, every place has problems. I mean, there's no perfect place. But the world has to get off of this addiction to energy. And that means primarily transportation. That's where the bulk of the energy is used, in transportation. Okay, so anyway, this leads into another topic. The staggering amount of resources that were used in World War II. This is really pulling up something out of the history books. But if you look at the amount of resources used in World War II, it's just unbelievable. The planes that were flying constantly, and the manpower, and the everything that it took to support the war effort. And then you had every country in the world literally involved in this in some manner, using all the resources, the metal resources that went into it. Just unbelievable. And, you know, I'm old enough to know people that were involved in World War II and even in World War I. World War I was not as resource intensive as World War II. World War II, we had the industrialized nations, industry, metalwork, airplanes, ships, and just vast amount of resources when you look at the, I mean, just unbelievable. And military usage of resources today is also staggering. So anyway, it's one of those things we don't see. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind. But just unbelievable the amount of energy being used in military efforts. All of us trying to defend against the other party. But literally, probably, I don't know what the percentage is, but just vast amounts of resources. Here's something that is one of my pet peeves, scientific vacations, where you have tier two scientists from... And I get my regular newsletter from the SPA. It's the SPA newsletter, but it's from the American Geophysical Union, meaning SPA is the group, the solar group. Just imagine every week you can be someplace else on the planet. You could be next week in Brapolenzo, Italy. How about Finland? How about Williamsburg, Virginia, or how about Palaiseau, France? In next week you'd be someplace else. So you are paying the bill for this, for these scientists to fly around, and typically also, in a lot of cases, they can take their wife, and they have events. These are not just at average places. These are at nice resorts. I've been to some of these because I paid my own way. As an independent scientist, I did not feel that I would sell my soul and my work for the ability to go on a scientific vacation. So if I went, I went for the purpose of interacting with the scientific community to present my material, and I paid my own way. Hotel, flight, dinner, anything that happened on my trip, I paid myself. And out of the whatever I was doing at the time, and a lot of those times, I just paid out of my pocket. I have some income now from my water filter sales, from my book sales, etc., and other things that might be going on related to my work. But believe me, these are expensive trips, thousands and thousands of dollars. And finally, I realized that these people that attend these meetings are simply tier two scientists, and you're not going to make any headway in the world of science by attending these meetings. Because, if you look at the meeting topics that they're giving today, they're the same as they were 10 and 20 and 30 years ago. These guys have not progressed. And That is the point. So anyway, the viewpoint of these people in the back of their heads is, don't rock the boat, just keep doing what you're doing, and just keep that paycheck in coming in. Scientific vacations, tier two science, just garbage science, because none of it is, it's just so far from reality. Anyway, here's an important issue. I'll just make this brief. The Democrats are going crazy because they can't win an election normally. So what they want to do is have mass voter registration. So you're going to hear a lot about this. You're also going to hear about changing, trying to get rid of the Electoral College. That is a terrible idea, because then you're going to have four cities or five cities. It'll be Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, and the Eastern Seaboard deciding, and your vote will not have any meaning at all. You may as well not even think about voting, because all of the policies of the United States will be targeted towards major metropolitan areas. Simple as that. So if you live in any place from Virginia to Utah, from Montana to the Mexican border, don't even go out and vote. It's not going to happen, but I'm just saying, these people are trying to sell the idea of getting rid of the Electoral College, because then what they can do is stuff the ballot box in a couple places. They only have to do it, like in Los Angeles, and when I did my research on the 2016 presidential election, there were 10 cheating centers in the United States that gave Hillary Clinton 17 million illegal votes. And we know now that this was done primarily at the precinct level. And what they do is they take people who are registered and vote for them. So if by the end of the day somebody has not voted, and it turns out that they sit in committee and literally fill out hundreds and thousands of votes per person and then stuff them in the ballot box. So a single person in a day that's on these committees will have filled out thousands of ballots each. And so overall in the United States, in the 2016 election, out of 10 centers, I can name them off. It was Los Angeles, Oakland, San Francisco, then up in Oregon and Washington State, the major metropolitan areas, Las Vegas, Denver, Colorado, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Those are some of the Midwest. Then you come down to Dallas, Texas, Houston, Texas, and then Austin, Texas. And then you go up to Chicago, and then the cities of Detroit, basically the Rust Belt cities up from Wisconsin into Michigan and into Pennsylvania, where the cities, a single city would carry the state. And that's the case with all of these. When I named Las Vegas, Nevada was 97% for Trump, except Las Vegas carried the state for Hillary Clinton. Same in Denver, same in Minneapolis, same in Oakland, same in Los Angeles, where they carried the state of California. Minneapolis carried the state of Minnesota. Denver carried the state of Colorado. Portland carried the state of Oregon. And you see what's happening. So they want to do away with the Electoral College, number one, because then they only have to cheat in about 10 places. They don't even have to run a campaign. And then in those places, they can concentrate on mass voter registration. And if, say, 60% of the people turn out to vote, actually vote, that gives them 40% of the population that's not voting to take those ballots and fill them out and win elections. And that actually happened. There's an article I read. It is on a website called frcaction.org. And it's talking about this. The date of this article was 11/29/2016. 2018. So November 29, 2018 is called The Cheat. Once again, that's frcaction.org. And the whole point of that article was that many elections in California were rigged because of voter fraud, because of this very issue where they literally went door to door soliciting votes, getting the people's names, and then later filling out the voters' ballots for these in the name of these people. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, millions of votes being cast in the name of other people. And you can bet now, if you lived in a state, say you now live in, let's say you live in Kansas, but you used to live in Nebraska, then you still probably have voter registration in Nebraska. And somebody there is filling out a vote for you for the Democratic Party based on the fact that you lived there. Or if you lived in two or three different places, even in the same state, because voter registration is a local issue. And so somebody is voting in your name in those previous locations where you're still registered as a voter. And most people, when they move, don't change their voter registration. So anyway, this is coming down the line, cheating at elections, and the way they're going to do it, number one, try and get rid of the Electoral College. Number two, push for mass voter registration, because they know most of those people are not going to vote. And then also, they're trying to get kids down to age 16 to vote. And what's going to happen with most of those kids when they get out of high school? They're going to move away and they're going to be someplace else. And so that voter registration is sitting there empty for someone to pick up and fill out and vote for the Democratic Party. That's what's going on right now. So just be very aware of that. Just an issue on shipping. There should be a national, some kind of a national effort to crack down on shipping abuse. This is UPS, FedEx, United States Postal Service, and they're just gouging unbelievably to ship small packages. I just had a filter package that went to a place. It was a post office box. And it used to be to send a pack of filters, like a 10-pack of filters, it would be, on average, $10 to $15, $12, $15, maybe most. Now it's $50. Come on. This is absurd. And you know what? I'm not going to change my free shipping because of this. One order, okay, I pay that extra. I pay the free shipping so that those customers are not, you know, a lot of these people are poor people. They live out in a more rural district. And to get free shipping is a big thing for them. Trump has actually addressed this, and he criticized Bezos because they have a contract with the Postal Service and I suppose the other shipping companies that they get really low rates. So what you're doing is paying for their basically wonderful shipping rates. They can ship for near nothing, and you know, I'm sure Jeff Bezos is not paying $50 to ship anything. He could probably ship a car for $50. Anyway, no, it's really a sad situation in this country. And that's from the past. I mean, this was going on. These rates were going up over past years. From what they were like 6-8 years ago, they were easily doubled. And in some cases, more than doubled. And that's just on the average. And there's no reason for that. Gas prices are not any higher. You know, there's really no reason for that. But there has to be some kind of moratorium because this affects the small business ability to compete with the monster places like Amazon, etc. And here's a topic that just yesterday Trump was mocking wind power. And, of course, this was in contrast to the New Green Deal baloney. And he was saying that wind power doesn't work, which it does not in its current form. He's absolutely correct. You know, he's not popular with the people that buy into some of these scams. And wind power, the three-blade wind turbine, has been a complete scam. Something I explained too, and of course, if you look at these people's objectives, to be 30% independent by 2030, it doesn't mean anything. What that means is that the governments will keep subsidizing this technology that doesn't work. And I talked about this on a previous show where I was talking about the specific installation up in Michigan. What was it? I forget the name, Deer Lane or something. And they're talking about the amount of energy that these three-blade wind monsters are going to produce. And they don't. They simply don't. Most of the time you will watch them. If you go up to Michigan, most of the time they will be sitting there idle. And from a national point of view, Trump is absolutely correct. Coal is our best, most reliable, long-term source of energy. And for power companies to be turning away from this because they can save a nickel now using natural gas, which is temporarily cheap because of fracking, is a bad idea. And it's going to come back to bite us really big time. I projected that you watch, these power companies are going to start going bankrupt one by one. The PG&E thing in California, they were using the fire as an excuse to go bankrupt. Remember when it came out that somebody said, it was this lady, her private wiring system caused the fire, one of the big fires in California. PG&E went running into the court saying, no, it was us, it was us, it really was. And why? Because they want to go bankrupt. They want to shed their debt because these utilities have been running on the policy of spend as much money, charge the public as much money as possible. And what they're doing is putting that money into the pockets of their stockholders. Remember that these are no longer, they're playing the game. They're playing the game of being a public utility, but they're a private corporation, which is a scam. So they're still running under the guise of we have to make some kind of profit to stay in business because the public depends on us. And it's kind of like the banks, too big to fail. The power companies, too important to fail. And it's a scam. So then when they go bankrupt, it's going to be a devastating blow to the economy. But then they're going to raise the rates through the roof because they know they got you. Without electricity, we're immobile. And if they move over to natural gas, that's the easy short-term solution. It's horrible management on the part of the utilities should come back under what they were before, a public utility where they are run and there's oversight. There's no oversight of these companies. Nobody really knows what they're doing, where the money's going, and they're not saving money. Here's the biggest issue. They're not saving money to decommission the nuclear power plants, 100 plus in the United States that are over their limit, their certified lifetime. They're extending them on a temporary basis, but this is all going to end. And it is coming to an end. And these companies do not have the money to decommission these power plants because they're leaking, they're in very bad shape. Decommissioning a nuclear power plant is a horrific operation because you have to take everything, every piece of clothing that anybody wore on that site has to be stored in a special location, and it's all being stored on site. And this is one of the other issues, is they can't shut them down because they're storing the nuclear fuel there, the new nuclear fuel that requires cooling. And that was the problem just now. Remember, this is the second time on the Missouri River, and all of these, where the flooding is occurring, they're worried about shutting down these nuclear power plants because if they do, they can't cool the spent nuclear fuel. That's not what the original plan was. The original plan did not have fuel that required cooling. Now they did. So they've been making bad decisions I don't know who's making these decisions, but they're bad. I'll then be talking about another bad decision in a minute. But anyway, the United States is in a horrific situation, and as with the FAA, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and other agencies that are supposed to be overseeing our nuclear power industry, they're filled with people from the agencies, from the energy companies. Just like FAA is filled with executives from Boeing, the oversight committees of the federal government over nuclear energy are filled with people from these companies. It's the revolving door of Washington. And of course, that was going on from under the Bushes, under the Obamas, under Clintons, and it was going to continue under Hillary, the Wicked Witch of the West. So it's energy in this country is a major problem. And Trump senses this, but he doesn't have good people in these agencies that really know what they're doing. This, I might remind you that my physics degree, my advanced physics degree, is in nuclear and solid state physics. This is something I happen to know quite a bit about. And I've seen the inside of these industries where they're run and operated by physicists who, they might be smart and book learning, but they're pretty dumb when it comes to common sense. And like most industries, people get into it and they can't really smell the roses. They're just, they don't have common sense. And it really doesn't even take common sense. It takes 2 cents worth of sense to understand that the nuclear industry is a giant boondoggle failure. And now they're pumping. They have these yo-yos coming out saying, oh, alternative energy doesn't work, so we got to go back to nuclear. That's GE talking. That's Siemens talking. Those people are being paid from somewhere. And by the way, I was speaking earlier about the first day of spring here. And also, it happens to be the full moon. So that's rather unusual to have those two cycles coincide on the same day. And by the way, this is also called the worm moon, because in Celtic legend, this is when you first began to see the worms coming out of the ground, is for springtime. Anyway, the full moon, the worm moon, on the first day of spring. And another quip about the Celtic calendar, and those are my ancestors, by the way, very proud of that. Very hardworking people. My ancestors being fishermen and potato farmers from Ireland. And originally, they were Nordic settlers from Norway, the Vikings. Those are my ancestors. Maybe that's why I'm such a rough person when it comes to tiddlywinks outfits like NASA. Because the Vikings were not people that took crap from anybody. And that's my heritage, and that's the way I am. So lucky me, too bad for NASA. And this has to be mentioned. There's a lot of articles. In fact, this was the main article this week in space.com. Rah-rah, NASA is going to shoot an asteroid down. Excuse me. Well, anyway, they have one plan for in 2 years, or 3 years, where they're going to try and hit an asteroid with an object moving very fast. And that's going to be a disaster because that thing could spin out of control. And hitting a bullet with a bullet, basically, the object's moving really fast. I mean, these things are really moving. And if they hit it wrong, they could cause it to spin and actually go off track. But the biggest problem is they really don't have good data on where these things are, how fast they're going, etc. And so the idea is to try and do these maneuvers a couple years in advance. Now what they're going to do is they're planning on exploding a nuclear bomb next to an asteroid. And what that would do was heat up the surface of the asteroid and cause it to melt and then spray off the asteroid, thusly changing its orbit. But in the process, boys and girls, you're going to create tons and tons of shrapnel. And so all of that then will be like a shotgun, guaranteed that that's going to hit Earth. Or it could break off pieces. They don't know. They're idiots. These are people who are idiots, complete idiots, experimenting with, you know, they're playing with fire. They're doing things they don't know about. In fact, they could, because of their ignorance, they could cause this asteroid that normally may have missed Earth by a little to actually hit Earth. These people are idiots. And I don't know who gave them, you know, let them out of their playpens, but, you know, they can pretend and lie and do filming in studios. And I'll be frank with you, those Mars rovers, I don't believe any of that. You know, maybe they had some 10 years ago that something that landed on Mars and drove around for a couple of days. But what we've been seeing, I guarantee you, is not from Mars rovers that are on Mars, roving around Mars and doing stuff. Sorry. And what I suspect it is there is an agency that has real equipment on Mars, and that's what they're taking pictures from those and sending them back occasionally to wow you, the public, to keep sending that money to NASA, keep your congressman sending those checks, just those checks and letters, yah, rah, rah, NASA. That's what's going on. But they don't have anything. NASA Tier 2 baloney does not have anything roving around Mars. That's exactly what's going on. But anyway, I had to mention also this bad idea about trying to move asteroids. They don't know what they're doing. And regarding asteroids, a much more viable solution would be to come into an asteroid and soft land on it. Now, we can do that. The technology is available to do that. And then have a like a Saturn V type of chemical booster on the side of it. And most of these are tumbling, by the way, which complicates the problem. But, you know, the other thing is you need good data to really know that in 3 years or 4 years, this thing is actually going to hit Earth. And so we need a greatly improved data on these objects. And NASA does not have that. So before you start moving things, you better know exactly where these are and what their physical orbital parameters are. But it would make much more sense, a much more controlled movement, if you had a chemical rocket of, you know, because the Saturn V, for example, or the other big Russian rockets, these are developing 7-10 million pounds of thrust, and they can do it for, you know, 20 minutes. That's a lot of force to move an asteroid, and all you got to do is nudge it a little bit, but it's under controlled circumstances. It's not doing something like exploding. Like, here's the other problem with the exploding nuclear bomb idea. These things are not a nice fixed wall. They're tumbling. They're irregular surfaces. So if you make an irregular surface real hot, it's going to shoot off not in the direction that you want it to. So anyway, no, they're really stupid. What you have to do is something that's very controlled. And so if it's tumbling, then you have to give a pulse and then wait until it comes around and tumbles around to the same position again, then give it another pulse. And the only way you're going to do this is with a big chemical rocket. So NASA, once again, who let them out of their playpens? If they're going to take all that money and do nothing, well, that's better than doing something that's stupid and has the whole world at bay because of their stupidity. Anyway, there's a good topic here, and it comes in the form of what are asteroids? Where did they come from? There are two main sources of asteroids. One is they were captured, most of them. And but there are good studies that have been performed, and I knew some of the scientists that did this, where they actually took the took pictures of especially the larger, what are known as the Apollo asteroids, and their larger asteroids, and they were able to fit them together in a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle and realize that these big objects came from a bigger object. And so the idea that some of these asteroids came from a planet that got creamed one time by something hitting it, like a Planet X type object coming in, literally hitting a big planet, hitting a big planet, and the cause of the asteroid belt. So now there's actual physical evidence of that. And the jury was out until about 10 years ago. I met a young physicist from Azerbaijan. She was a woman, very intelligent, at one of the American Geophysical Union meetings, and that was her research. And it was very, very good research, very well done. And she had her PhD in physics. So anyway, that's very interesting. But clearly some of those objects have been captured, mainly by Jupiter, and then work themselves into orbits that are in that region between Mars and Jupiter, where there's no planet to basically shepherd them and corral them and herd them. There's no planet there, so they can exist. And when you look at the orbits of the asteroids, I have a program that has all of the asteroids, all the major asteroids and their orbits charted. And it's more like a big donut in the region in which the asteroids orbit the sun. And many of them are going in a retrograde orbit, which means they're the opposite direction of the rest of the asteroids. It's the opposite direction that the planets move in. So clearly, those are captured objects. And short of collisions, it's very rare that there would be a collision there. So these objects just continue to orbit around the sun, and maybe someday they'll have a collision with another object, but it would be very rare because, say there's 10,000 of them in that region, that gives a lot of room, a lot of elbow room for each one of those to move around without ever encountering another one. Just wanted to re-mention that my new MR7 water filters, whole house water filters, are on the sales page with a big discount, and with a bigger discount when you buy a replacement filter pack with them. And they last for like 80,000 gallons. This is an amazing unit. And, cancer has overtaken heart disease in the United States as the number one killer of adults, which means you're going to die of cancer before your heart gives out in the United States. And the biggest reason is people are showering in a chemical soup. The water that comes in your line is horrific chemicals, and every day you go in there, flip on the shower, everybody in your family, and you flip on the shower, you're showering in chemical soup. Then my regular water filters are on sale, and of course the new ebook is there. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.